And our guest, Steve Bassett, for this hour, will take your phone calls as we talk about disclosure and some of Stephen's work. All that is next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Stephen Bassett with us. Stephen, the people you selected for the citizens' hearing, the people who testified, they were noted in ufology. How did you pick them, though? Did you know them? And I assume you know them all personally, but did you pick them because of their various expertise? You had a reporter, Linda Moulton Howe. You had the late Roger Lear. But how did you select them?
Essentially, there are several hundred witnesses that would have been suitable for the citizen ground disclosure, and the same for congressional hearings. I wanted to get certain particular areas into that hearing because they're very powerful and the witnesses are particularly credible. I also wanted to have a number of researchers there to lay a ground work behind all this, sort of establish a platform. So we had, I think, 13 of the top researchers, I think, in the world on this issue. There were a number of witnesses I would have loved to have had there, but they were not available or declined. The one criteria that I might add is that I made a decision that the contact issue, as important as it is, would not be part of this particular citizen hearing, that we would focus elsewhere, because the contact issue is like graduate school on this subject, and the people in D.C. are still in high school.
The people that you selected have had incredible response in the media over the years. How did the media, how did it handle and treat the people's hearing?
It generally was pretty good. We had a lot of articles, which are to be seen up on the website, citizenhearing.org. There were a number of interviews that took place, both of myself, some of the committee members, the members of Congress, and so forth. We lost a great deal of the coverage because of the tragic Boston bombing that took place just about 8 days, I think, before the hearing was to begin, or even sooner than that. And as a result, a great deal of the media simply went there.
That's your timing again.
And that's just the way it is. Probably one of the most interesting things that happened was the New York Daily News sent a reporter down virtually on day one, and he wrote this awful, awful piece on the citizen hearing. He just came in and found the silliest stuff he could find.
Was he the one who said the UFO carnival is coming to the press club or something?
I think so.
He was the one.
Well, they got so much flack from people. You know, these things go up on the web where comments can be made and so forth. They got so much flack that they sent him back on Friday, 4 days later, and he did a reasonable piece on it. I just thought that was a milestone
neat.
Of sorts.
Lee Spiegel did a great job reporting on that.
Of course.
He always does.
Yes. So, but did we get all the covers I would have wanted? No. If I could do it again, I think we could probably have increased that. But the citizen hearing was fundamentally prelude to the congressional hearing initiative. And I can assure you, if we get a hearing committed from the Congress and start bringing those witnesses in, there'll be no lack of media coverage.
What I find fascinating, Stephen, is as I've always found fascinating, even doing this show, these are real people. These are hard-working, dedicated people who don't have an axe to grind. They're telling the truth as they saw it, as they witnessed it. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. They've carried these stories all these years, but they're very credible people.
Well, of course. So there's been tons of credible witnesses speaking to this, including high-level military and political people. For decades, the problem is the truth embargo was solidly in place through 92, and there's been such a political mess since 92 in the U.S., and the truth embargo was so solid that just the momentum of it carried forward for 20 years that they've been screened out. Whether you're talking about Edgar Mitchell or Admiral Lord Hill Norton or astronaut Gordy Cooper, and I could mention so many others. The truth embargo is what it is. It is a barrier to acknowledgement of this issue come hell or high water. And just like when Barry Goldwater who was, of course, a very well established in the military connections as well as political connections, press Curtis LeMay on this information. He was told in no uncertain terms, never asked me that again. The government has been extremely serious about maintaining this embargo. It is a number one high priority, vastly secretized program that the government has maintained for national security reasons. And those reasons have evaporated by and large, and the circumstances as of 2014 are such that if the U.S. doesn't end the truth embargo, another nation will do so. And so it's really come to Jesus time, and I'm hoping to get that message across in D.C., along with the help of a lot of your listeners and other people around the country. With any luck, we'll break through, we'll get the hearings, and I assure you, if we get the hearings for the witnesses that you would expect, the media will be on it in a level they've never seen, and that will be the end of the truth embargo.
Excellent. Let's go to Tim Racine, Wisconsin, to get things going on the wild card line. Tim, go ahead.
Good morning, Stephen and George. How are you doing this morning?
Good, Tim.
That's really good. Yeah, you're just saying, before my question, this Rendlesham Forest just brings that all to mind. I mean, you had England, you had the USA, you had UFOs, you had all the top people that there could be. And if you can't open this up, I mean, it just stinks all the way around, if you ask me. But here's my question to you, Stephen.
Yes, sir.
When they do open that proverbial bottle up, what could we expect as people, like in government, for government, from the government, what could we expect as people, everyday people? And then what will we expect from the Catholic side and everything else in churches and everything? And I'll take my answer off the air. And, George, I love your show, buddy.
Thanks, Timmy. You be careful out there. Well, the Catholic Church, as you just mentioned, Stephen, they are believers in extraterrestrial life. They are simply saying that doesn't negate God by any means. And I think that they would not be surprised and would probably endorse this.
Yeah, we're not going to have a problem with the religious, formal religions. In fact, they just did a study that came out, I think, two weeks ago, in which they surveyed people in a number of religions, and the result was that not a big deal. And so don't worry about religion. It's going to be fine. What you can expect, and this is a very short answer to an extremely long question, what you can expect is that immediately there's going to be an alignment between the public and the media on this issue, meaning that the media will be virtually unleashed and no longer under the spell of the truth embargo. And given the ratings and the Pulitzer Prizes and other and monetary benefits from going after this story with enormous intention, intensiveness, the people in the media will align, and they will then begin pressing the government for information. The government will resist. There will be huge debates over what should be discussed, when it should be discussed, what information should come out. There'll be fights over document releases. And this process will go on, but ultimately the government will lose most of these, battles over information. And the information will come out. It will probably come out in an order that is most favorable to the government, with the worst stuff coming out later, the more positive stuff coming out initially. And you may see an amnesty program. I'll certainly be pressing for that. That would protect people, insiders and whistleblowers. You may see a truth and reconciliation program develop. And these will happen pretty quickly after the disclosure event. Now, meanwhile, there's going to be similar processes going on in other countries. And there's probably going to be a little more, cooperation from other nations. And so you may get some information may emerge in other countries before it comes out of U.S. government, but the overall process will probably result in a huge learning curve on the part of the world's people regarding the truth about this ET reality going back at least to Roswell, at least to the late 1940s. And obviously from that will come a host of developments, many of which we can't even envision at this point.
Stephen, will we get word that these ETs have been abducting people and doing these heinous things to people?
Certainly, acknowledgement of contact and the inability of the government to prevent it will not be the first thing that will come out of the government public relations people. And any acknowledgement of an agreement between our government and extraterrestrials, one or more groups, on a deal struck will certainly come out as late as possible. And any government-conducted abduction-type events designed to get information from contactees about what was going on by simulating what is called military abductions or MILAB programs will come out at the absolute last minute. I mean, they will hold off on that to the very end. And this is just one of these are just one of many things that are going to be really tough public relations problems for the government. But they will be part of an even longer list of public relations problems the government has now. And the people are going to have to get in first of all, the people are going to have to generate some understanding, some forgiveness, some tolerance, but also an intense desire to take advantage of this paradigm change and participate in what could be and should be the greatest age of institutional reform across a broad spectrum of institutional reform certainly this nation has ever seen, and that's very doable, and I hope that happens.
Let's go to Nick, Thousand Oaks, California, west of the Rockies. Nick, you're on with Stephen Bassett. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Great to talk to you and Stephen. George, I first want to say thanks for your hard work.
You're welcome.
And my sister and my mom had met you. I haven't met you yet, so got there at the
great.
Yeah. So my question is for Stephen. He'd already touched on Barry Goldwater, which was my question, so I'm going to go back. Mr. Bassett, anything after World War II in regards to Truman's knowledge into UFOs, and other than Truman, you know, back during Lincoln's time, or, you know, Ulysses S. Grant's time, prior knowledge into UFOs and past presidents before the year 1900?
Sure. There's very little information at all about ET involvement with government or anything else prior to 1947.
And then back.
And my expertise is pretty much confined to 47 and forward. If there was anything, it may not be significant, frankly, but we just don't know. I mean, certainly we're learning a great deal about ET interactions with humans going back thousands of years. That information is slowly coming together by some extraordinary research just being done. As far as Truman is concerned, there are several documents which indicate that Truman was clearly involved in this issue, aware of this issue. And I am quite confident it was Truman that gave the order to General Ramey to change the Roswell story from the saucer to a Rawan weather balloon. Mm-hmm. There's no way that Ramey could have done that on his own. I have a feeling that Truman does. There's a pretty important story there where he made some very difficult decisions, and that story has yet to come out. But Truman's administration was a lot more profound than people know, and it was pretty profound. And, of course, there's a huge amount of information about the interaction of this issue in presidents, which Grant Cameron has been assembling for years, and you find that at presidentialufo.com, which is an extremely important website that everybody needs to spend time on.
Stephen, when this disclosure finally occurs, it won't put an end to this discussion of UFOs. What will the next step be? What will the next conversations be?
Well, first of all, George, to be frank, it's no longer a discussion about UFOs. I mean, I don't believe I'm in the UFO business at all. It's about extraterrestrials. The UFO is the language of the truth embargo.
All right.
Yeah. And once disclosure occurs, what has to happen is that first the public needs to be brought up to speed, and we're talking 6 and then some billion people. That's a whole lot of intellectual power.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of institutional resources. And all of those will be brought to bear to assess, understand, catalog, study, and sort out this information from the background noise, which has accumulated over the last 67 years. There's a lot of there. Most of the stuff on the internet is simply wrong. And that's going to be very helpful in and of itself. And as that knowledge base grows, very quickly, a lot of people, both politicians, military, and citizen activists, are going to start suggesting policy approaches to the issue and how to deal with it. In addition, they're going to be looking very hard at the effect this has had on the social contract in America since 47, and all of the abuses of power within the secrecy complexes and so forth. And there's going to be movements to reform all that. And once this reform process gets underway, it's going to snowball and start carrying over into just about every area of institutional life in America. And so to me, that is what you expect to see emerge fairly quickly in the aftermath of disclosure, unless the government somehow takes draconian measures to shut this down. And of course, if the government were to do that, the reaction would be, I think, quite extreme.
It would be huge.
It would be very bad for the government. It would be a huge mistake.
Fred's in Connecticut. Hi, Fred. Go ahead.
George, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to say, you know, I'm an airline pilot myself, and if I ever saw anything in the sky, I would never ever report it for fear of retribution. But I got to say, the work that being done for towards disclosure and whatnot, I really do appreciate it, and the people that come forward. I mean, it truly is it takes a lot of courage, and for those of us out there that are too scared for retribution, we sure do appreciate that. And I just
thank you.
That's all I wanted to say tonight, George.
You are very welcome, Stephen. That's for you.
We had a pilots panel in the citizen hearing. There's been a number of press conferences. It's well known that several decades ago, the civilian airlines made it clear to their pilots, don't talk about this. We don't care what you see. We don't care if the damn discs turn up right off your nose and stay there the whole flight. You do not talk about it, you lose your position.
That's right.
The military pilots were told they'd lose their flight privileges, and so they shut up. But not totally. What they did, it was many of them were going to Richard Haynes at NASA, who had an independent personal project, to catalog these pilot sightings, and they would provide these accounts to him, I assume oftentimes under an anonymous name, and then he put together the pilot's sighting database, which is 3,500, 4,000 strong, one of the most important pieces of evidence in the world. So again, you see that ultimately the government's playing whack-a-mole with the truth, and it has to lose. There have been plenty of pilots that have come forward, and of course, they talk about discs flying off the cockpit of their planes, being seen by themselves, and sometimes the people in the plane, and that's pretty powerful evidence there's craft there that are not human.
Stephen, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, more cases of people simply disappearing in parks or hiking. Bizarre. One includes a firefighter who is simply gone. He's vanished and left his shoes behind. Who would do that? So we're going to do that the first hour, followed then by a series of special reports by investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe. And when we come back in a moment with Stephen Bassett, we will take your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Stephen Bassett. Stephen, had they lived, Bud Hopkins, Dr. John Mack, would they have been invited to the citizens' hearing as witnesses?
Probably not. Not because John or Bud weren't extraordinary men, did extraordinary work. As I pointed out, contact was not part of the first citizen hearing. I would love to do a citizen hearing on contact, which would make for a truly interesting event.
Sure would.
It's a possibility, but right now, of course, the focus is on getting disclosure.
Stephen, for people who want more information on what you do, they want to track you, follow you, as you go around the planet. How do they find you? Where do they go?
Well, the key site is paradigmresearchgroup.org, and that's P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M, paradigmresearchgroup.org. They can just Google my name, Stephen Bassett. It comes right up. Then, of course, the email is prg@paradigmresearchgroup.org. We've got a large email list that we send updates out, so just email that email address and say subscribe, and that'll get them. And then all the past updates are archived. You can easily find the archive. It's listed on the updates that come out, so they can go back and get caught up pretty easily.
All right, let's go to final calls here. We'll go to Stephen in Boston, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Stephen, thank you. Good morning, and you're up with us.
Good morning, George, and it's 4:39 here in Boston.
It sure is.
And I'm so happy to finally, after many years, I was with Art Bell from the beginning, and all of you. What a wonderful program.
Well, George, thank you, Steve.
I think I know the reason why the governments throughout the world are not disclosing.
Tell us why.
Because they have to have the cooperation of the ETs. Hello?
Yeah, we're listening. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, sorry. The ETs have been here, for decades. They say hundreds of years. They have not made a formal introduction to the nations of the world. For some reason, we don't understand. We know that they're up there. We're not panicking in the streets. But they're not making any formal disclosure. Now, if the president is going to make a disclosure, he's going to have the ET's cooperation. They're going to have to come down with him on the red carpet for the press conference and show themselves to the world beside the president. And the reason government, I think, is not willing to disclose, because they're not going to get, and they have not, and they can't expect to get, the cooperation from the ETs. They're not going to come down the red carpet.
All right, that's an interesting take. Stephen, that's possible, huh?
Certainly. That's been suggested many times, and it's not out of the question. Disclosure is, though, defined as the form of acknowledgement. That's all it is. It's not open contact. It's not ETs standing with the president. It's simply the formal acknowledgement. And it's possible that somehow ETs, or ETs have, in fact, suppressed this event from happening by threats or whatever.
Yeah.
I do not think that is the case. And the reason I don't think that is that when you examine the ET behavior across the board, and you look at it objectively, what the ETs have been doing have been driving the process forward, not inhibiting it. And in fact, if they did not want disclosure to take place, terrestrially, there's probably a lot of things they could have done that would have taken pressure off the truth embargo. But in fact, they're doing all manner of things that are putting pressure on the truth embargo. So it is my view that the ET is not the block, that the cooperation that the president needs is not with extraterrestrials, but with the Pentagon.
Do you think that there's reverse technology being kicked back and forth here? They're giving us technology or not?
I think the evidence is clear that we have technology from crashed vehicles. That is a certainty. There are stories out there that other technology might have been more formally transferred and part of deals that were struck. I can't rule it out. I have not seen enough evidence to convince me of that. But it's not out of the question. But we do have ET technology from from crash vehicles, a number of crash vehicles, and you can be certain that we have picked that apart for decades with no financial limits. There's pretty good evidence we've actually created our own anti-gravitic craft. So the ET technology issue is a huge component of disclosure, and one of the primary reasons why we need to have disclosure, because we need that technology serving us, not as weapons, but as solutions to some of our huge problems.
All right, let's go next to Scott, somewhere out in the Midwest, first-time caller. Scotty, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling, being allowed to call in.
Sure.
My question is, look at the public releasable stuff. A good example was where Denmark government released F-16 heads-up video and radar footage of a target that was flying. So it's not just somebody seeing it. You have a system that's saying where it's going, how it's going, altitude, airspeed, heading, closing rate, and being able to do maneuvers that would hurt a standard human without protective flight gear.
Yeah.
And the other thing is Stan Friedman had mentioned about releasing secrecy oaths. I don't think that'd be a good approach, but what I was saying, what if they had people that came forward and didn't give their specific job description, just said I was at a large military installation, which everybody knows is there, not what the base was doing or the installation was doing, but just saying we saw this event happen, and if you don't release what the base was doing or what your specific mission was, it would be pretty much a generic way to describe that information. And I'll take my answer off there, and I really appreciate your time.
You are very welcome. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, the fact is, of course, we've had many witnesses come forward already who have put their name and their history completely out there. There have been a number of witnesses that have been operating more from an anonymous background. We have more than enough witnesses right now to blow the issue out of the water should they be able to testify on the Hill. The total number of people that have engaged the issue since 47 is in the many, many thousands, most of which are committed to their secrecy oaths and will not come forward, possibly will do so after disclosure. I think that there will be a move to have an amnesty program to facilitate people coming forward with the information post-disclosure. I would support that. Of course, the government would have to sign off on it, probably by presidential order. It's a complicated thing, but there may be something along those lines. I also will support Truth and Reconciliation because we have much business ahead of us and a lot of important work to do. We cannot spend the rest of this century yelling at each other or suing each other over the history of the truth embargo. And so I will support that. That will also help bring information out. These are constructive approaches, but they are most likely to take place. They will not take place prior to disclosure. First disclosure and then these kinds of amnesty and reconciliation projects.
Stephen, do you see people like astronaut Edgar Mitchell as heroes?
Oh, God, yes.
Me too.
He's one of the great figures of the 20th century, and I just hope that it's compelling to me to get this done while Edgar can see it.
Sure.
We lost two key witnesses, since the citizen hearing. We lost Roger Leering. We lost Jesse Marcel.
Oh yeah,
Junior.
Junior, sure.
Very, very painful, and yet I know both men were extremely pleased that they were able to be part of that event and tell their story to former members of Congress, and if they'd been able to tell that story to sitting members of Congress, it would have been 10 times more important to them. So I was very pleased that they were able to participate. But I don't want to lose any more witnesses or any more people. I'd like to see disclosure right now. Get it done so we can move on.
If you end up doing like a contact disclosure, get people like the funeral director from Roswell, Dennis.
Again, there's a whole list of witnesses. If we do a citizen hearing on contact, there's a specific list of witnesses that would be appropriate. There's no lack of people ready to come forward. That we have. What we don't have is the willingness of the political leaders to allow this into the process. And there is a reason there hasn't been a hearing since 68, and that is they know full well that if these kinds of witnesses get on the Hill, it's over. But it may be that a lot of them are ready for it to be over. And that's what I'm going to be going to Washington to find out around November 5.
I mean, you got people in to Washington. You paid expenses. Mm-hmm. Can I ask how much this budget was for this?
The hearing was budgeted for $300,000 and ended up costing $700,000.
Oh, my God. Now, was this donations or?
The money was part of a film production deal backed by a very supportive Canadian. We still have a movie to do. We have $1.6 million to pay back, and that's fine. I mean, but the advocacy work is primary, And it'll all work out in the end, particularly if we can succeed with disclosure. But that's how we got the thing funded. And we were very fortunate, but we need more funding. We need funding for this congressional hearing initiative to do it right, and we hope some people will be willing to step forward on that.
When Lawrence Rockefeller passed, he would have been a big supporter of this, wouldn't he?
I think so. Certainly he would have been. He wanted disclosure in 1993. I mean, that's why he approached Clinton. He was the good Rockefeller, if you want to say that. He had supported Mac and others. He clearly was not shy about working outside the box. But he is there, almost no one else, with the exception of, say, a Joe Firmich, who's not in Rockefeller's league, but no one else at that level has been willing to step forward with serious money. We don't need a lot. I mean, for a fraction of what is spent annually on saving the whales, which is a noble enterprise, I'm not knocking it, probably we could end this in truth embargo pretty quickly, but the truth embargo itself suppresses the willingness of people to fund this work, and that's how the government wins.
Let's go to Apollo, Pennsylvania. George is with us now. Hey, George.
Yes, hey, very exciting message you're getting out here this evening about disclosure.
Indeed.
The big thing here for this to go is why it has to be out is that another non-disclosed thing is our mini solar system coming through our solar system here and the closest point in 2016. The thing is that a 5-mile ET ship and a couple other ships might well be necessary to save a lot of people on this planet if the tsunami events at the extreme is 3,100 feet. This is what the disclosure should be. What do you think?
Well, you're speaking to the issue of what with the general concept of Planet X. If, in fact, a large body,
is a
dwarf star, planet, whatever, is, in fact, in a highly elliptical orbit and about to move through our solar system, there's no question that it could do extraordinary damages, depending upon how close it gets. I don't know if that's going to happen. It's a big theory on the internet. There's a lot on there about it. There's no question that it's the kind of Deus Ex Machina event that the ETs might intervene on. I don't think they would intervene, say, on a nuclear war. If we decide to launch missiles, so be it. But if a huge asteroid was going to strike us, they could divert it quite trivially, and I would think they might do that. So if, in fact, Planet X is real and it's going to be a problem, well, let's hope the ETs could help, because there's not a damn thing we can do about it. But do I believe there is such a body about to emerge? I have not seen enough evidence to convince me of that.
Jamie in Las Vegas, thanks for calling, Jamie, and you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George. I just wanted to give my opinion about disclosure.
Sure.
I applaud everything the conference does, but when it comes down to it, I don't think it's ever going to happen. Basically, my thinking is, you know, for, you know, how many some odd years the government has kept it secret and has been working, apparently, with extraterrestrials. I think when it comes to disclosure, I just don't believe it would happen because of the chaos. I think people would find it hard to believe that or hard to comprehend that, you know, there's a race that's
sure
still powerful out there beyond our comprehension. I think that would just create more problems than solve, you know.
Stephen,
yeah.
We've talked, it's a good point, Jamie. We've talked, Stephen, over the years that maybe it won't be a formal disclosure. Maybe it will come from the witnesses, the people that come forward. What do you think?
Well, that's small D disclosure, and that has been happening. But
yes,
the advocacy work is about capital D disclosure, meaning until it comes from the president's lips, we haven't had disclosure. So by definition, that is what we're seeking. Small D disclosure, yeah, it could go on for another 50 years and we wouldn't get acknowledgement, but I don't think that's the case. This gentleman, he's not alone. There are a lot of people that feel the same way. This idea, though, of chaos and so forth is really ideas that the government was pushing forward aggressively in the early days of the truth embargo. It serves the truth embargo to have people feel that way. However, I do not believe that the evidence now and the circumstances now support that. I think that this gentleman will be quite surprised with how well the disclosure event is received, how little chaos. I mean, if you want chaos, just look at ISIS across Syria and Iraq.
Chaos.
That's chaos. The truth embargo will not generate that kind of chaos. So while I appreciate his concern, I think he'll be presently surprised with, in fact, what happens. Now, will it ever happen? Is it possible disclosure can happen? It's inconceivable to me. The Soviet Union, wanted to last forever. It made it, 73 years. The Third Reich was going to last 1,000 years. I think it lasted 15. You cannot sustain lies at this level very long. And the U.S. government's had a 67-year run. But given the nature of our world, the technology, the communications we have now, the truth embargo simply cannot stand. So I'm afraid disclosure is inevitable and probably pretty soon.
Steve, do keep in touch, okay?
I certainly will.
Stephen Bassett, all his information linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Disclosure, just an amazing possibility that one day something like that could occur. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.